This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Greg Keller, CTO and co-founder of JumpCloud. Greg, hello.
Hello, Ian. It's good to be here. As my wife would say, I've avoided all adult responsibility by never joining a big company, and I've only done startup. Some have scaled to big heights, some have failed miserably, but you can call me a serial masochist by seeing problems as a product-led person and trying to crack those problems open and bring them to market. That's been my wheelhouse over the past 30 years. JumpCloud, to quote my wife, is my mistress. Or my third son, a child, along with my co-founder, an amazing entrepreneur, Rajit Bhargava. We were in Boulder, Colorado, very small, tech-savvy town, mountain town, college town in Colorado, in the middle of the United States, in the mountains. He and I were paired together about 10 years ago through a common friend of ours, a venture capitalist by the name of Brad Feld, who said, "You guys are a lot alike. You should get together and talk about problems to solve." We did, and that problem, which had both of our tails wagging as puppy dogs looking at a bone, was this. We made a conscious decision 10 years ago to bring the world an alternative to Active Directory, Microsoft's stalwart, well-known product that fundamentally is the glue of the Microsoft IT stack. Well-tuned and well-fortified to manage its own heterogeneic ecosystem of Windows, Windows servers, M365, or prior to that, Outlook Exchange, its network, Radius services, among other Microsoft tools. We decided that it would be cool if the world had something else to depend upon. That was 10 years ago. Now, roughly 200,000 organizations have adopted the product. We have amazing customers all around the globe. We are a remote-first company, practicing what we preach. Our customers who leverage JumpCloud are of all different makes and sizes and types. We tend to focus on the SME, largely because they're underserved, and Microsoft isn't necessarily there to help them in these fast-growing cloud-forward companies. Many of them are remote, so we practice what we preach through the distribution and security of Mac, Windows, and Linux machines, provisioning through SSO to all of the applications that an employee would need to hit, the life cycle of the employee as they join a company, move through the company, and their roles change. Guess what? Their entitlements change. When they leave, making sure it's all stripped away and cleaned so that the company is secure. We do more than that, but that's the general thesis.
I'm smiling because you're singing my tune. I have written enough pieces and done enough podcasts on the debacle that is entitlement control within Active Directory. So let's start with that. One of the problems we have is you join a business, you're given some entitlements. And you move through that business, but nobody ever takes an entitlement off you. They say they're going to because you've changed roles, you've changed departments. But actually, 3-6 months down the line when they're supposed to, when your handover to the next person is carried out, everybody's forgotten. You rise up through the ranks and suddenly you discover you've got access to everything in the business. You are such a security nightmare. How do we do better? Because all the attempts so far to do that come into mature environments with a mess of entitlements. What needs to change and how do we get better and reduce that whole security mess?
I pray your audience is technical because it's going to get nerdy. Here it goes. What you have witnessed with roughly a near 30-year propagation of a style of authorization, widely known as group management, in the world of Active Directory and its open source cousin, LDAP, groups are widely known. It's a very simple construct. If you're in the box, in the group, you get the things. If you're not in the box, you don't get the things. There was, ages ago, an on-premise infrastructure where hierarchically orienting groups, nesting them, would either give you a more refined scope of entitlements or just the opposite. The problem with domain controllers, Active Directory in particular, is that there is a very messy system of no garbage collection. What happens is, as companies get bigger, more IT staff comes and goes. They all sit in front of the very primitive Active Directory dashboard. Many of your listeners probably understand exactly what I'm talking about. They make the group changes, they add groups, they add members in it, and then they leave the company, and there's no artifactual cleanup. No one's doing a forensics exercise or an archaeological exercise of, maybe we should go in and look at these nested structures. And way down at the bottom of one, they're not discovering that some user has had this fully entitled access.
But is part of that not also because when we started with that whole idea of no access within a group, it killed everybody. You turned it off in a group and everybody in the group got killed, or you turned it off in one group and that user, who's remote from that, suddenly can't access something that they're accessing every day because we can't see how this traces through.
100%. That is absolutely what occurs. You asked a question. I want to talk about the future. Think of that as the baseline and what can get super complex very quickly. This gnarled rat's nest of group entitlements, and there's some old stale ones and new ones. And moving forward, the whole world is shifting towards ABAC. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this principle. Instead of group membership as RBAC, where the R stands for role-based access control, ABAC is based upon attributes. The models of identity are shifting from the entitlement generally fully scoped and the responsibility of a group and bringing that back up to the identity. It becomes an identity-centric problem in that way. We like to say when an identity is created in the modern world, it is decorated with information. It has its simple information about who I am, my first name, my last name, my username, the basic primitives. And then there's a gaggle of other information that the enterprise wants to know about this person. Now, here's the catch. Those are attributes, things about describing, metadata, describing the identity. In the new world, we have this system which dynamically is reading at all times those attributes. Think of those things as the tickets to paradise, or the tickets that will revoke them from paradise. It just depends. What it's doing is a natural cleaning mechanism so that there's no dangling privilege inside of groups.
But we've tried to do that to some degree with RBAC and PAM and everything else. We've tried to say, here's your job role. Your job role requires access to A, B, C, and D. When your job role changes, you might keep A and B because they're relevant to the new job, but now you get F, Q, and R. The problem with that is that those also apply to other people. They apply to large, complex objects. If you're going to go to attributes, we need a much more granular understanding of an individual, a much more granular understanding of what their job requires them to have access to.
That's right.
But our environments aren't built for that level of granularity, so how do you match attribute with granularity?
There's a couple of things. First of all, it's complex, and the complexity is each resource is not the same. The way a network communicates or is using authentication, for example, through the RADIUS protocol, is vastly different than SAML, which has an assertion-based approach, similar to old Kerberos in some ways. Not always, but some ways. OIDC is token-based, kind of like SAML, but not. LDAP has its own mechanism. So, number one, you have to be savvy across all of that real estate. Specifically, on the other side of each of those assertions, we'll call them assertions, has a different set of metadata describing the payload of entitlements. In the old days, it was just, here's my group name. If I'm in the group, I can do all the things. And I go into the application and I will say, if member of this group, then I can do these things. The new world is describing it through attributes. So even the payload of the assertion is richer in metadata, putting more emphasis on the identity than on the service, to protect the service, generally speaking. They know that as the identity changes, its groups, it's dynamically changing, then the assertions will change too dynamically as they get into the resource. That's how their tickets, their keys to the kingdom will either change positively or negatively. The other part about this is you said something before, which is least privilege. Attributes are generally can be looked at as a static thing that can be changed. And then the dynamicism comes on how the attribute is read when it's changed, and then subsequently all the things downstream change. Now, this is really the point that I think you're driving at, is entitlements. How do you keep driving down to the least maximal privilege that the person should have?
But part of taking that privilege away is understanding the implications, as I mentioned earlier. Right. What we don't have is we don't have modeling tools, a tool that can import our entire access controls and say, all right, if I remove from you the right to this object or this group of objects, what is the implication for you in terms of other objects and other things that you access? And if we can't model that, and if we can't do it at the group level, how do we do it at an attribute level, which is a much larger, more complex, more richer environment? Because that modeling becomes critical, because the first time you cut one person off from accessing one printer, everybody in the business says, it doesn't work.
It's very true. Very hard problem to solve. Not to sound cheesy, but you're almost throwing a softball at me a little bit. What we've created in GemCloud and the vast amount of resources it touches, from computers to servers to mobile phones to the networks that users are on-premise equipment, cloud-based objects and services, we have this obscene, almost 360-degree view of what the end user is touching. I'll get to the entitlements part in a second, but since GemCloud was born, we have been given the gift of graph engines and other things that we have deployed under the surface of the platform to do these things that were very challenging back in the 90s when AD was built. But what you are suggesting, it's a very hard problem of posture management at the service level. This is not necessarily from the survey that we just announced, but from our own customer surveys. On average, a customer has 73 applications. We're not even talking about on-premise stuff. We're talking about service through a browser. It's a hard problem space to solve. There isn't an awesome solution for it yet.
So let me change that tack slightly. We're talking here about people and attributes and access. The truth is, they make up probably less than 10% of the objects in our Active Directories or our directory services. The reality is they probably make up less than 5% in most organizations.
In large organizations.
And all those other things have accesses. Large amounts of them have root-level accesses. They are such a nightmare from security. How do you extend this idea of attribute control to objects that exist in our directory services that need to be there because they're the master object that's running a database, or they're the master object that's controlling that server, or they're the object that's allowing that server software to run? We still need to treat those the same way as we treat people, and we don't. We set them up, we give them a default password, we fire and forget, and then we get bitten.
Exactly. It gets compromised. So a couple of things. First of all, leverage things that use tokens, hardware-backed tokens, if possible. I love the concept, and this just shows Active Directory is just too antiquated for this, so you have to think more on a modern case-by-case basis. I'm going to exacerbate the problem. Assume I have two clouds. I have Amazon and Google Cloud. It could be Azure, any connotation of that. And I have two objects inside of them, say a Kubernetes container, inside of which are all your artifacts. Those two things need access to each other, depending upon how your application may be running. The very first thing you need is an authentication vehicle. So you said it before. You're likely not using SSH, but you probably want to look away and look towards non-static credentials, certainly not clear text. You want to have a basis of authentication that is using the concepts of zero trust or just trust in general. So how do you get these two things to peer and look at each other, create a handshake and trust, cert exchanges, token exchanges, handshakes, stuff like that. Once those basic principles happen, you have the foundation of what any true modern directory service should be doing. You have provided the access. You have granted the access on the basis of minimal least privilege because of some level of entitlements. We didn't necessarily get into that. But then, most critically, we have a vehicle, a mechanism to verify trust between each other on a basis that is not perpetual or not static. Active Directory wasn't necessarily built for that. It didn't understand what those objects would be. It knew what a Windows server was, of course, and what a printer is. Those are primitive objects, but certainly not a highly dynamic or even a Linux server. Like, start there. It doesn't understand concepts like this.
One of the challenges, though, for getting to grips with this, if we were talking about Bank of America, Bank of England, the Ministry of Defence, the government of another country, you have the resources available, the specialists who understand what directory services are, people who specialise in identity, people whose job is purely and simply to do nothing but manage access. But that's not necessarily your target market. You focus often on SMEs. People who, 15, 20 years ago, were paying the son of a member of staff who was at university to pop in at a weekend and keep the systems running. Today, well, some of them have moved on a bit, some haven't. But we've got a new group of players in town, MSPs. Budgets, however, when we talk about them increasing, they increase by a tiny percentage. They don't even keep pace with salaries. How do we make this simple enough? How do we make the tools effective enough to address an SME market?
This is why we invented our product line. Let's first categorize the SME. It's actually more diverse than people refer to as just this micro set of companies, a couple of dudes in an office with an idea, or a dentist office that's been around for a while, but it's got 10 people. The SME, you can categorize as a few ways of looking at it, either by revenue or by employee count. We'll stick with employee count. In this particular survey, there were 1,200 companies that were 2,500 employees or lower. So call it the median of about 750. JumpCloud is smack dab in that. We're 830 employees. We are SME, but we're a very advanced growth stage, lots of mature processes, compliance, regulation. We're acting like huge enterprises, but we're agile, nimble. We just have a smaller employee footprint. And we're all remote. There's no more brick and mortar anymore. Those are sets of complexities. There's a wide spectrum of companies in the SME. There's 5.5 million in the UK alone that are under 50. So just as a side note, every one of them, to your point, are budget stressed. The Bank of England, all these other companies, certainly finance, while not immune to the macro situation, they largely have stayed strong. Like large enterprises, they feel a little bit of disturbance in the force, but not like the SME, which is being completely packed in the middle of it. Lots of redundancy layoffs, lots of constrained budgets, because it's a trigger effect, it's a domino effect. If no one else is buying, no one else is receiving monies, which means everybody is either staying static, not progressing. What these SMEs we have witnessed and what the survey has really reinforced is this. The IT staffs, if there is an IT staff in the SME, is looking for advantages in a few ways. One, expertise. For example, I am one IT person at a 100-person company. It looks like I'm it for the year. My boss has said, I'm it. No, I can't hire that plus one that we thought we could get. MSPs in this moment, this is their shining moment. Why? This particular overworked IT person now has a cost-effective mechanism to perhaps depend upon an MSP for device enrollment from Apple. There are MSPs that specialized in those things because this poor guy is a Microsoft guy. He thought he was going to get the Apple expert and the help to come in. That never happened. So what does he do when all of his engineers require Apple support? He's dead in the water. So MSPs to the rescue. There's a whole class of them. The same thing, same model, but in the world of security. So you've heard MSP. Have you heard of MSSP?
Oh, of course.
This is even more pronounced as their moment. They can now be looked upon as those who can assist, again, perhaps an undereducated IT person, maybe long in the tooth in the industry, but certainly short-versed in moving to the cloud. These are all areas where they are deferring to outsourced and cost-effective means.
Finding that MSP or MSSP that understands your business, your industry, your environment is still no easy task out there. You've got to spend some time and have some knowledge yourself before you start. It's not as simple as just going to find an MSP out there who understands Windows and one who understands Apple and bring the two together. You find yourself playing referee. But we've got other tools coming along that are creating a problem. And other technologies coming along. How do we keep control of our external advisors, as well as our internal problems, they are becoming as much a challenge to us in terms of how they keep their skills and their knowledge up to date, how they interact with me and my organization and how my organization is changing, as the board and the internal staff.
I'm only going to add to your set of worries, because the reality is, I'll give some advice, but let me first add to the worries. The security posture of companies, especially in the SME, can be questionable. And many of them don't have the intrinsic, quote-unquote, paranoia is not retroactive kind of philosophy, which is actually written on the headquarters of JumpCloud's walls. We live by this philosophy. If you are, assuming you need to reinforce that with your MSP, meaning you need to check their security postures, do they have compliance, what is their understanding of their supply chain, how do they manage their own employee access, do they do background checks, primitive things like this, I would counsel anyone who is looking for an MSP, your same standards, hopefully they're good, should apply. Don't just hit the buy now button without reading the fine print of your MSP. I'm probably stating the obvious, but many people are just overworked. They have a bud, they get into an arrangement, and before you know it, the MSP gets popped, or their tools that they're using get popped, and it's just a nightmare.
That supply chain attack, we've seen it so many times, and the SME doesn't know how to react when that supply chain attack suddenly hits their MSP. They're dead in the water. There's nobody for the MSP to go to and say, right, here's a list of actions we need you to take, because the SME doesn't have the staff.
They don't. This goes back to what the survey was indicating. SMEs, reduce budget. Guess what? That means I can't do any internal training because I can't buy Know Before or whatever. There's a gamut of these kinds of products. Or I can't bring in expertise to do pen testing. I'm chopped off at the ankles from my normal prototypical security things. The pros of MSPs are they can and should have those certifications. It's a major problem, though. So your audience should be evaluating them and holding that MSP up to the same exact standards you would if you had all of the inclusive budget for it.
But just as we get into grips with MSPs and our contracts and how we run this, technology loves to come along and sort of, you know, pull the chair away just as we're sitting down.
Yep.
Enter AI over the last few years.
I knew this was going to happen.
We have this obsession going on in the industry at the moment, particularly the security part of the industry, in that AI is going to solve our problems. It's not. It doesn't have the domain knowledge. It doesn't have the system knowledge. It certainly doesn't have knowledge gained over years as a subject matter expert of my environment. But it does bring some useful things to me. It brings higher automation, the ability to actually go and do some things. The downside is that the board only see the go and do some things part of that and says, well, you don't need another member of staff. We'll just put some AI in there.
Yeah.
How do we begin to get to grips with this? Because we're struggling with deploying AI in the business, as your report showed. We don't understand prompt engineering in many organizations. Yet we've got users using this. We've got developers going out onto the internet. We've got security teams going out on the internet and asking, how do I secure this? How do I write this piece of code? And that code ends up in production because nobody thinks about it. And if you can ask that question, so can the attacker. So what should IT teams really have top of their agenda the moment AI is mentioned?
First of all, your audience may not even realize you and I are deep fakes right now, and the AI robots have just generated this whole podcast between us. Let's start with the primitives, the basics. AI is not coming for your job. And I'm going to give some tough love. If you are coming from a place of fear, you should exit the industry now because it's only going to ramp. You need to control the beast and learn how it will work for you and for your company. Really start to understand how it will create efficiencies in your job life. We've got to be able to come at it from that perspective and not the place of fear that the media wants to definitely puff up and I think is patently wrong. From an IT person's perspective, there's a long forgotten child. AI, in many ways, first of all, there's a whole ecosystem. AI is not one thing. It's a gaggle of technologies. And not just ChatGPT, which is the new thing, or Gemini, or pick your flavor of the day. NLP and other variants of AI have been around for a decade. Crunching data, learning from it, understanding patterns. There's still absolute magic to that, and we're not even near the end or the midpoint of the machine learning journey. What principally IT needs to understand is, how does this stuff make me better? I can go do the hard things. Ticket management, they're coming at it from a set of primitive questions. How can I go from 85 tickets a day across ServiceNow or Jira or whatever? How do I get that to 10 that I have to respond to? Tooling and open source variants are starting to help that. Reading the inbound tickets, parsing what it thinks, and providing suggestions. Overwhelmingly, the hit rates of positivity, like problem solved, are there. Hey, I'm locked out of my computer or whatever. A human should not have to do that stuff anymore. Whereas the IT person now can be thinking more objectively forward in their careers and with the real problems that they should be solving for their bosses and the company.
That's a hard message to carry to the board. I've seen some exceptionally good deployments of machine learning and AI where, yes, they reduced 4.5 people to one person on that job, but those 3.5 people were brought into the organization to do other jobs, to expand what the organization can do. And one of the reasons that that was powerful was because all of that subject matter knowledge that those individuals have stayed in the business. The bad ones are, yes, oh yeah, we're just going to bring this in. We don't need all those tech support people. First line, second line, lose them. We can just do it with an AI. It's a nightmare. Because nobody's then checking what the answers are that it gives. Nobody's checking how people are reacting to it. And your MPI score just goes through the floor.
100%.
But IT doesn't have the skill set itself to begin to understand what is an effective deployment. How does it bring this in and utilize this? Are you seeing the MSPs, MSSPs coming along, learning how to be effective using this technology and then introducing that not only into their own tools, but also then backloading that into their clients?
We think of it like this. In the spirit of, I'm an American, so I'm going to use a baseball analogy. We're not even in the first inning yet. We're still in the dugouts of this, which is understanding the technology. We're seeing how it can be somewhat useful. Broadly speaking, you're right. I don't think a lot of people know the gravity of the situation. They're kind of playing with the bits, as it were, and learning how to understand it. Your point about the security perspective, though, and I interpret that as, we're implementing some of this new fandangled AI stuff to make our jobs better. Am I commingling my corporate data with external language models, large language models? That's the stuff that you better be reading the fine print about these technologies. I can't tell you, are all the MSPs looking at this? I can tell you my conversations with security or very progressive IT professionals definitely are concerned about this. But they're also now learning to choose their vendors wisely. Everybody has an angle on this. Everybody got freaked out when ChatGPT was consuming all the data from all the people and where is it going and it's going to be accessible by the bad guys. And guess who jumped on the bandwagon against that? Google. Your data is your data. It is all contained. You have the encryption keys to it. What's the next move from there? And this is only a few months ago, so it's early days.
But if commingling isn't keeping you up at night, if commingling as a security person is not the monster in your dreams, you're clearly missing something by the amount of people in your organization who are running out there, not just using ChatGPT, but are using this vast array of AI-driven tools that half the creators don't find themselves able to explain effectively.
It's true. I use the word primitive. These basic new first-generation tools is probably the better way to put it. There's the whole Captain Obvious approach. This is going to make me write words better. We'll make the assumption the company has allowed it, meaning it has a mechanism to say, you may use ChatGPT. We've seen this in the world of marketing. For example, non-native English speakers, perhaps in different countries, that need to sound credible. They want to do great work. They can hammer and look for leads. ChatGPT is an amazing thing about learning about the customer and here's why we want to talk to you. Those are great use cases, pretty harmless use cases. When you start to tilt the utilization, I think this is more or less your point, to the IP of the company, software engineers, because they have access and privy to some of this stuff, it can get gnarly. IT, you know, if they're any good, this should never happen, but if there's any language within tickets that may give a signal to a password, for example, that's bad form, but that stuff is what you are terrified about. By the way, this is how, not through AI means, but how the bad guys are continually compromising static credentials inside of domain servers in a Microsoft environment. If that stuff is captured and then propagated out through AI channels, commingling, it's a bad day.
I asked you a question earlier. I asked you about tools that allowed me to map the impact of changing an attribute. And there was a reason for that. I was kind of expecting you to suggest things like a graph database. But at 2,500 physical users in my organization, once I scale all those non-human objects, that's a phenomenally huge and complex problem. And even with the power of the cloud, it's probably not that far off the problem of doing aerodynamics on a Formula One car in terms of complexity. But what about AI? How does JumpCloud take AI and use that for me to say, I'm looking at changing these attributes. I've got a problem with that attribute or that group of attributes over there. Show me what the impact is of doing this and leaving it to run. Is that somewhere you go? Is that something on the roadmap?
We have a team. They're sort of like our variant of Navy SEALs. We call them JumpCloud Labs. And a lot of people try and get into this group, which is a very exclusive group of engineers run by our chief architecture team and chief scientists team. That is the group that has done magic already to formulate the roadmap and instantiation or exploitation of AI within the platform. Is JumpCloud interested in this? We're beyond the interest phase. We're seeing the practical impact that it can make. Without divulging all the things, let's just say that the AI's impact on our obscenely large data sets across 200,000 organizations has taught us a lot. In terms of access patterns, in terms of predictability, this is my wink, wink sort of indication that, yep, really interesting to us. Stay tuned.
So this is the point where I put people on the spot and I ask them for three things. Three things I'm going to ask you for is, I want you to give me three reasons why I should be moving away from RBAC to ABAC and what I need to worry about when it comes to AI in my business.
Three for each? You're giving me homework.
I'm going to make it really easy. I'm just going to make three things across those two items.
Number one, you're getting out of the propensity to have static groups that just remain forever in perpetuity, which has been the single biggest problem. Number two, you're moving towards a sort of self-cleaning mechanism through shifting the perspective of attributes onto the user and letting it being the vehicle that instigates the change and is constantly reviewed from an entitlements perspective. That is the way forward. From an AI perspective, finally, I think it comes down to understanding responsibly how to leverage this technology. Don't come at it necessarily from a place of fear. Just have a healthy dose of paranoia as you're going. And just understand you're in control of the robots. They are not in control of you. And as I say this, I love my robot overlords.
I so want to think of describing ABAC as the rumba of my cleaning of my environment. Thank you for your time. I appreciate that.
And we so appreciate just the opportunity to talk to you. We've been big fans, so thank you for having me on the show.